Hello and welcome to another episode of Union Blue Radio. I'm your host, Sam Blazer. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts via Skype, Allison Lucan and Matt Suva. How are you guys doing today?
It's a new day. It's a day of technology.
This is the weirdest version of the podcast ever.
It's going to be easy for you to, you know, edit this bad boy. So I wouldn't be complaining too much, right?
Is that true?
Yeah, why is that?
You know, these are just going to be straight up MP3 files, and it all just comes across perfectly. It's going to look beautiful. Matt's going to love it. It's gonna be the best podcast ever. I'm saying it. I'm calling it right now. No.
Wow.
Until my internet drops, and then everything gets garbled and pixelated and all of that.
Exactly.
Gross. It'll sound like the Shutdown Fullcast guys do.
Oh yeah. But let's talk a little bit about the Blue Jackets results since we last met.
I don't even know.
And we haven't met in a little while, actually. Wednesday, November 9th against Anaheim was an OT win, 3-2. Blue Jackets gave up a two-goal lead. Not the best. Werenski with the OT winner, Wenberg with a sublime pass. You know, I know this is, long time ago at this point, but what are we thinking about this game? Was there anything to really take from it? I know that it was really, really, you know, tough to have an opinion on this game, because after they beat Anaheim the way they did before, it's, you know, I don't really know what to take from these Western Conference opponents, especially when they're as tough as they are. Is there what did you guys think of this game?
I think the one big takeaway was that this was right on the heels of kind of some expressed concerns about Brandon Saad, and then he comes back and makes the huge play to turn the traffic back down towards the Jackets' offensive zone and ultimately result in the game winner. So I think it was nice to see a little bit of redemption for him in that. And, I mean, good God, that pass from Alexander Wenberg and Zach Werenski, who clearly just has ice in his veins. That was a beautiful finish.
No emotions.
No emotion. Flat smiley face.
Exactly. Matt, what did you think of the game?
I'm completely on board with that description. The Saad issue the game before against the Blues, I mean, Tarasenko is a great player, at the same time kind of turning into a loose door to just walk right through is not ideal. And this time, instead of doing that, a turnover that was to a degree his fault, he turned around, got back in the zone in time, and poke-checked Getzlaf right out of having a chance on goal, and that changed the whole complexion of the overtime and led to the overtime winner. So I think Allison got a quote from Foligno after the game that it's nice to see one go his way. It's nice to, because he does care, and he's going to have a lot more plays like that in him. It's important that a player as good as Saad is contributing in a positive way and is continuing to be in the good graces of the coaching staff, because he needs to play as much as possible to make an impact. And if he's making mistakes that irk coaches, that's not going to help him get more ice time.
No doubt. No doubt. Now the next night they played against Boston. It was, not as good. It was a 5-2 loss, four
just,
goals
just
in the first
not
period.
As good.
Yeah, there's not a lot to say about it. For whatever reason, the Blue Jackets, they don't have Boston's number by any stretch. The Boston just dominates them almost in all facets of the game. It's almost like there's communication problems, issues against that. Bob wasn't great in the game, four goals against on nine shots. What did you guys think of the game? Or was this one of those games where you just, you know, just throw away the game tape?
I think the Bob thing is the weirdest of all of this. It's this weird island of awful in the middle of a bunch of really great performances for him. On the season, he's a 930-something even strength save percentage. And to go out and give up four goals on nine shots against in that game, really weird, really weird.
True. Allison?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely... Matt and I were making jokes that Boston is the new Nashville. And for those of you who don't remember the old days, the Jackets used to never be able to beat Nashville. And they finally broke that curse. But, you know, Tortorella was quick to point out that from his perspective, he pulled Bob early because he didn't like what was being done in front of Bob in terms of any support whatsoever. But I feel like, I feel like I saw this game coming because the minute Anaheim was a rough, physical, hard game, and then it went to overtime, and it was an emotional win, and then the team had to pack up and fly immediately to Boston. And I feel like I just saw this letdown coming. And I can't decide, honestly, if I think that this is one of those games that Torts references when he says they need to be a little bit more grown up and more consistent and fight through for every single game, or if it's just allowed that when you have a game like that, travel and then play the next night, it's going to be rough. But I saw this coming. The minute that game on Wednesday went to overtime, I was like, oh, yeah, tomorrow's going to be hard.
Well, and a couple nights later, they played a sloppy game against St. Louis. It was an 8-4 win. Pretty much everybody on the team got points. It was interesting. I was at the game, and they were winning by a lot, but it still felt really close just because of how much pressure St. Louis was putting on the Blue Jackets at times, and they have so many dynamic players. What did you guys get from that game? Was there anything in particular that stood out to you?
Well, there were four goals against that were all on the power play, on the Blues power play, which was not a good night for what at the time the Blues and the Jackets were tied for the number one PK in the league. It was a high scoring game and a lot of people were having fun with that, but it was not a good game played by the Jackets. And I think they have to consider themselves lucky to get out of that with a win, irregardless of what the goal differential is.
There was a lot of frustration expressed by players and coaches in the post-game press conferences that were shared on Fox Sports Ohio. And it's understandable because if you were to just look at that box score, you would think, oh, high-scoring affair isn't that exciting. But it came because of a lot of really weird breakdowns. It came because the Blue Jackets were allowing all kinds of shots against. It came because Bob was not having a good night either. So had it not been for the Blues having a worse night, that probably tips really awfully in favor against the Jackets.
No, definitely. But what was nice about it is there were some players that got to break out a little bit despite, all of the negative surrounding it. Marcus Nedovara had his first goal. Sedlak had a couple of assists. He's been working really, really hard this season, and he's been a pleasant surprise. And I think this is one of those games where, it was perfect that he was able to pick up those points. He needed something to show for it after all. Sam Gagne had a couple goals. Cam Atkinson, 4 assists. And it's not necessarily a game tape throwaway, type game. It's what I thought about the game itself was that Foligno at times has an ability to take over the game, and that's not something we saw last season. There were multiple times he just had the puck on his stick and it was kind of like, all right, I know where I'm going with this. I know what I'm going to do. And I don't know where the confidence was last year, but this year, for whatever reason, this game was definitely one of them where he just absolutely took it over at times. And I think he's one of the main reasons why the Jackets are doing as well as they are. Now, to kind of transition over to the Washington game that happened earlier on this week, or I guess I don't know when this will be released, but you know what I'm saying. Tuesday, the November 15th against Washington is a 2-1 overtime win. Atkinson with the winner. Bob, another stellar performance. What did you guys think of this game? I know Werenski, of course, is going to be the common theme throughout all these games. Was there anything in particular that stood out?
I think this was a really good matchup game to see. I mean, this was the first time the Jackets were playing a Metro opponent this season, which is a little crazy. So I think I was really curious to see how they would stack up against Washington, who was tops in the conference, obviously. And, I didn't know if they were going to be able to pull it out, but I think Werenski's not going to be the theme just for this week, but for this season.
Oh, yeah.
That shot, I mean, good Lord. I mean, just amazing.
It doesn't really get any better than that. It hit the absolute perfect spot. If this was the way I described it, at least when I was talking to my family about this, was that it was like something out of a movie. Like you almost couldn't like place it any better than he did to get it into the position that it was absolutely fantastic. And then to follow that up on Friday, they play the New York Rangers. Sorry, Matt, you don't get to talk about the Capitals game. I know
that's
that you.
Okay.
I know that. Oh, so yeah. Go ahead, Allison.
One thing I want to say about Washington, because I feel like we're now getting into a sample where we can start to say this might be a thing, is that this team came out for the third period completely recommitted to the win. And Werenski didn't just have that tying goal. He came out and doubled his shot production in the third period. I mean, he was just a monster. And this is a game where I don't know if the Jackets pull out the win last season with where they were, but they came out and just demanded the opportunity to win, and they got it done. And I think that's a statement for what's changing in the culture of this team and not just what they do on the ice.
He's definitely on the same wavelength as what Foligno's been able to do, you know, in taking the game over. Werenski can take a game over, and that's absolutely freaky, with how old he is, that he's able to do that. I don't really get it. You know, there aren't young players like him that, like, you know, do that, especially on defense. I mean, Paul Berthelot, a gentleman who writes on Buckeye State Hockey with us, he had an article at the beginning of the year. He's about to exceed, you know, points, like, for someone that's under 20 years old, and it's going to be absolutely out of this world. And I'm really, really hoping that, you know, he can keep it up, at least at this pace. And then Friday, the New York Rangers, the Matt Calvert game, as it'll be known, he gets pucked to the face, 30-plus stitches, shorthanded goal, game winner. Unbelievable. Bob played well once again, another common theme. What did you guys take out of this game? I took out of it that, you know, of course there's the please like my sport, hockey players are tough as all get out, but 36 stitches to your face, I wouldn't come out of hiding for, you know, 2-3 months if I had, you know, that many stitches. I got a concussion a week and a half ago, and I'm still trying to milk it for as long as I can. I'm like, you know, can you guys turn down the lights? Can someone hand me a Gatorade? I'm doing what I can to keep milking it. And he went out there and scored a shorthanded goal. That's unbelievable. Matt, what did you think?
This continues a string of success against the Metro Division that we'll get to another one from today, which is good news. Purely for Matt Calvert, I'm astounded that he was able to successfully pass the concussion protocol. He apparently had to go through that before he was allowed back in, which I understand that's good that he passed it, but holy smokes, that's a terrifying situation to be in. Even my parents, who don't pay very close attention to hockey, saw that on highlights the next day on like a local news or something, them scraping up the blood after the hit.
There's that one song, I forget what it was. When I watched hockey when I was younger, there's a song, Blood on the Ice. I can't remember the exact lyrics to it, but that was the first thing that came to my head, is that, you know, anymore in hockey, there's so many precautions that you don't see stuff like that. There's not normally someone who's bleeding profusely. It's a very, very rare occurrence, and it was like something out of, like, you know, the 1970s or, you know, even older, where there's no protection. It was just gruesome, and the fact that he's able to come back was out of this world. And the thing that he'll obviously get overlooked out of it all is that this is actually a good game, a really good game against one of the best teams in the entire league right now. And we're going to talk to John Coppinger a little bit about that, about the Rangers and their season thus far and how they, you know, got to this point. Was there anything that you guys took in particular from the Rangers game? Because Blue Jackets right now are kind of riding a PDO high. Rangers kind of riding a PDO high. But overall, you know, this wasn't an out of control 8-7 game. It was actually kept in check. Matt, what did you think of it?
Well, this is looking at Natural Stat Trick in their game recaps or their game stat pages. The Rangers game marks the second of three consecutive games in which the Blue Jackets managed to out-attempt their opponent at 5-on-5. Now, I haven't checked whether or not that holds up with score effects, but that's not a bad showing for a team that had been a little iffy at best going into these couple of games. Is there any certainty that they're going to hold this up going forward? No, three games is not a lot. But I would say that the combination of winning and winning in a way that is a little more sustainable than get 10 or 8 goals against a goalie is encouraging, at least in a small sample.
And then, of course, the game today, you know, earlier on today, the matinee affair, September, oh my gosh, November 20th. Oh. See, I can't get this straight today. I'm stumbling all over my words. 3-2 win, Blue Jackets, couple great power play at the very end of the game. The story, of course, from this was the, I guess, dive, some people are calling, from Nick Foligno. What was your takeaways from this game,
Allison? Well, I think it was, again, another, I mean, to go into the Caps building and then pull out a win again is huge, putting them up 3-0 against Metro opponents. On that particular call, or, you know, that seems to be sparking outrage, you know, it's frustrating to me that this is the narrative that's coming away from this game, and I guess it speaks to what Tort says all the time about acknowledging that the Jackets just haven't earned the respect in this league that they need to earn, that we're talking about this because there was a penalty. But while I certainly wouldn't have come back into play after I got hit in the face with Matt Calvert, so I can't identify on that one, I can say that if someone waved a stick within the general few inches of my head, I probably would flinch. And I have to believe that that's a natural reaction that would happen. I don't think Foligno was trying to do anything. I mean, we've seen these guys try and get the call. I don't think that's what we saw there. I think it was a natural reaction to a stick coming into his personal space, and the call was made. Was it the wrong call? Fine. But, I mean, this is the game of hockey.
Get out of the man's personal bubble. I understand.
That's right.
I understand.
That's right.
Matt, what did you think of the game?
I think it was really weird that it happened so early in the day. I understand this is a thing that's going to happen.
Thank you, Matt.
Sunday matinees are just, there's, do not mesh up with the schedule that I associate with hockey.
That's it.
That's some insight right there. Thank you, Matt. That's really good stuff.
Matt goes, if it's not starting at 7 o'clock or 10, then, you know, I'm not into it. I don't want to watch the game at all.
I'm still thinking on Pacific time. So to wake up and look at that and say, whoa, this is 9 a.m. Why are we playing hockey? It was very strange.
Which reminds me, you know, Matt's going to be traveling to go to Thanksgiving, you know, in upstate New York. He's been in San Francisco for the past, you know, what, past weekend? Or how long were you in San Francisco, Matt?
5 days, six days, something like that.
5-6 days. And then Allison was in New York and saw Hamilton the day after Mike Pence was there. So this is why we're doing the Skype call, because we're, you know, all over the place. We're recharging our batteries. It's, you know, we're going to come back, you know, better than ever. But, you know, just give us some time, guys. Just give us some time, listeners. Now, this upcoming week, this Thanksgiving week, a lot of games.
And
I wasn't
insane.
Expecting it.
It's insane.
Absurd.
It's just nuts.
They're playing Colorado tomorrow, today, or yesterday, depending on when this comes out. Then on Wednesday, November 23rd, against Calgary, Friday at Tampa Bay, Saturday at Florida. That is a lot of games. At some point, I think maybe tomorrow, the 21st, I think that they'll start Curtis McElhinney, just because of the sheer amount of games. They need to get him in somewhere, and I think on the back-to-back, the weird matinee game, it would be a good time to put McElhinney in there. That's just me, though. What do you guys think? How do you think they're going to handle the goaltenders this upcoming week?
I definitely agree. I think you're going to see McElhinney, if not tomorrow, because, again, it's a Western opponent who is struggling right now. But I actually keep thinking, and maybe you guys can help me remember, like, I can't remember a schedule this tight since the playoff year when they had to reinsert the Dallas game later in the season that created a situation similar to this. And when I have the time, I really want to understand. I mean, this must push the limits of what the CBA says is acceptable for a number of games in a period of time. You're going to have to see Curtis, I think, Monday. And then, gosh, I mean, there's the second back-to-back is Tampa Bay and Florida. And I don't know who you would put him in against on that series. That's going to be a tough call.
Yeah, they're both great teams. Tampa Bay's been, you know, playing real well. Florida's a little bit banged up. I think Florida could be, you know, not necessarily ripe for the taking, but they could be a team that they could start McElhinney against and get away with it. And I'm saying this, but in reality, McElhinney has done well in the one appearance this year, so I'm interested to see how he does and if he gets in for a couple of games of work. Now, this Blue Jackets start, let's talk about that a little bit. This is the best start in franchise history.
Woohoo!
That's unbelievable. As long as I've been watching the Blue Jackets, and it's interesting talking to people around the city is that, oh, so they're good, like for real this time. And when people say that to you, you kind of think to yourself, well, I really don't know how to react. Obviously, writing about the Blue Jackets, you get asked these questions from time to time, and they go, well, should I buy tickets? And I'm like, well, obviously, yeah, you should go to these games.
Yes,
the games
please.
The games are fun regardless, but people want to see a winner. And I think Columbus, and they're not any different than any other U.S. market, they really, really want to see a team win. And after having the franchise be, you know, as you know, weak as it is without having many playoff appearances, this is a team that I think right now could use some fan support. I'm hoping it'll come. They're at 22 points right now, currently in second Eastern wild card spot. Those are a lot of words. Bleah. And that's obviously as this is being recorded right now. Who are the players thus far in this season that are most impressive to you guys? Do you have anyone in particular? Obviously, Werenski mentioned Foligno. Is there someone that's a little bit under the radar that you're a big fan of?
I will go out and I'll say, you know, it's easy to talk about Werenski. It's easy to talk about Foligno. But I think that the player who's really the linchpin behind all of this right now is Bobrovsky. We talked about their PDO high right now. And these guys are taking shots, but they're also giving up a ton of shots. And they're riding some really high shooting percentages for the guys who are scoring. So the fact that Bob is being Bob is what really is keeping these guys in the hunt, because they're giving up so many shots, it doesn't work in their favor otherwise.
Matt?
I think that's a point that I wanted to jump on, that the question of, is this team for real? Are they actually good? The answer is a bit uncertain right now, because for as good as Bob has been, and Allison is right, he's been outrageously great, the rest of the team is bleeding shots. And for that to happen requires there to be a goaltender to be that good. In fact, the team defense is atrocious right now. Others have commented that maybe the team defensive changes have been what has impacted the team, and I don't think that's true. I think, yes, Werenski is making a good impact, and whoever he's playing with usually ends up having a good showing, and that's about it. There's a lot of room for this team to improve, and they probably will need to improve, because if Bob falls back to earth, things are going to fall apart very suddenly. So is the team for real? The points right now are for real. Those aren't going away. That's for sure.
They are tangible.
However, going forward, does that continue? It may not if Bob doesn't continue.
And it just goes to show, too, how the lesson is to get the points when you can early, for exactly what Matt said. This is why it was so hard for the Jackets to claw back when they had weak starts. Because if you have this, I mean, we don't know if there'll be faltering, and if there is, how much, but to have the points in the bank now is a better cushion than trying to chase them later.
No doubt. And kind of on Matt's point, the points are there. Yeah, we just talked about that. But what I'd like to see is about the Metro opponents and how they were able to perform against them, because those are going to be the bulk of the games. And they weren't even facing like the bottom dwellers of the division.
Yeah.
And these past three games have been a pretty good showing, at least from standard, you know, even strength possession numbers or shot differential numbers. And I obviously, when they're playing a team like Boston, that's tough. They got their butt kicked on that end. And there's a couple other games where that ended up happening too. But those Western Conference teams, and especially those Pacific teams, are really, really tough. And I think those were like 30% games a couple of times. And that's tough to make up on the other end to try to balance that back out. And hopefully, you know, later on this week, I'm going to write a little bit about that and try to figure out what the heck's going on and how the Blue Jackets can improve on that end. Seth Jones is going to be coming back. He has done well with Werenski. I think that once he ends up getting back in the lineup, there's going to be some normalization there. I know that, Matt, you weren't so sure about it, but I feel more comfortable, you know, putting Seth Jones and Werenski with a lot of minutes there, and then having, you know, a David Savard, a Jack Johnson, a Ryan Murray, and kind of having them take a step back and have Jones filling those minutes just because of how dynamic Jones is. And he's coming back a little bit ahead of schedule. Allison, do you think that Seth Jones is that big of a difference maker that he could affect the team by a wide margin?
I do. I mean, if you talk about, I mean, what's one of the ways that you limit shots against? You get the puck out of your own zone and down where you're playing offense. And he's got the vision and the speed and the athleticism to either carry the puck out on his own or to make a really strong first pass. The other thing that I found out a couple weeks ago when I was talking to Zach, right when Seth got hurt, and we haven't recorded since then, but Zach was talking to me about how Seth has really been very vocal with him on the ice and gives him a lot of feedback before and after good and bad plays. And I think that when we look at a player like Werenski, when you have a guy like Seth Jones constantly coaching you, and it's something that Zach seems to welcome and want, I mean, that is another reason why it's so important to have Seth back and why he'll be a difference maker, not just in his play, but in helping to grow that play from Werenski.
So mm-hmm. I wanted to ask a question that I had forgot to include. Oh, okay.
And with that, we'll welcome our guest. No, I'm just kidding. Matt, go ahead.
What do you guys think of Ryan Murray's play so far? He hasn't been as effective offensively as he had been in the past. His shot differential performance has been so-so at best. Is there a real concern here, do you think?
Allison, do you want to take that, or do you want me to take it? With a heavy sigh, I guess I'll take it. I think overall, Murray, this is probably his worst year by far, by any way you slice it. The shot differential metrics, his point production, he doesn't look comfortable. I think that's the point that at least from an eye test perspective, that I'm not seeing. I don't think it's too encouraging that when he's out there, he looks tentative. He's not making the plays that he can, because he's a good skater. He's a great passer, and I feel like he's not doing either of those things at a good clip right now. He's just not himself, and I wonder if that's an injury. I wonder if that's him being paired with a player that he's not normally with. And he's been switching around a little bit, but with the Jones injury, he's been with Jack Johnson a fair amount. I wonder what's going on there. There was something I was going to touch on in one of my articles, is that maybe Ryan Murray could be like trade bait, but I don't think that should be necessary, at least for right now. His value isn't too high, and on this bridge contract, it's a pretty darn good deal. But it's going to be a tough decision for the expansion draft if he keeps playing this way, if he's going to be someone that they protect. Allison, what are your thoughts on Murray this year?
Yeah, you know, and it's, I was just looking here too. Again, I went to Puckalytics. You know, every time I go back and kind of look at the team overall, I kind of gasp in a not good way at the shots against that Murr is letting up. And I don't know what it is either. I mean, I think I'm surprised it's worse this year than last, because I know he also had some growing pains finding the right communication pattern with Torts. And we know that there's Brad Shaw in the room now, who has a really good rapport and is doing a really good job coaching up the defense. But yeah, he needs to be better for sure.
I think he can be better too. And I wonder if putting him in a more sheltered role, maybe putting him down on the third pairing with someone like, say, Dalton Prout, and letting Murray kind of not run wild, but have some freedom there, and putting him in some offensive situations, I think that could do some wonders for his confidence and do some help definitely improve his tentative play. And I really, really think that there may be something lingering, especially after the injury he got in one of the first few weeks of the season. But that remains to be seen, and we probably won't find out for, you know, a year or two, because that's just how that stuff ends up working.
I will note, as a loaded sort of question as this was, he did have a good game today against Washington. Whether or not that continues necessarily is a different question, and whether or not that this is just the worst, I don't know, 10-game stretch of his career, and it'll come undone very suddenly and get back to normal, who knows?
Do you guys think that this could be a Buckeye State hockey curse after he took that picture at Cannon Fest? I'm just saying, we have to have another player come on. We have to have him take a picture, and if he doesn't do well, there's definitely a Buckeye State hockey curse.
We need to have a player from another team. Clearly,
exactly. Maybe a like a Sidney Crosby or an Evgeny Malkin. We can have them come on here and then see how that works out. Allison, you had one. Did you have something to say before we head on to our interview with John Coppinger?
Well, I think it's just interesting, even in this Murray situation, when I was looking at the defense so far. I mean, while they might not be the very best in the league top to bottom, it's really becoming a competitive space, right? I mean, Golubev gets hurt. He's out of the lineup. Now Prout gets hurt. It's going to be interesting to see if he's going to come back into the lineup with these guys all so close in terms of skill set where they are other than Jones and Werenski. It's kind of intriguing. It's a little bit of a little story to watch to see how, I mean, someone's going to have to step up and fight for their role eventually to get back in the lineup and stay there. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and in years past, at least from like, you know, a blogging point of view, we've pointed to a player and kind of said, this guy needs to get in, and then the other players, you know, are doing significantly worse. They're all almost kind of stuck in the middle, if that makes any sense.
Right, right.
No one's really stuck out. And I think after the top pairing, like you said, there's just not really a whole lot there, at least offensively or at least shot differential-wise. It's tough. I don't know what they're going to do, and that's luckily, you know, that's why John Tortorella gets paid the big bucks, right?
Let's talk about that for a little bit. I mean, everyone said he was the first coach to be fired, and looky here at his little Blue Jackets.
I wonder how sustainable it's going to be. We talked about the sustainability, and I don't think he's going to be fired. That was never going to happen. As much as, you know, Bovada said it in Las Vegas, that was never going to happen for Tortorella, especially the way that they brought him on. They're obviously going to give him a full season, even if this went terribly. Tortorella, I think, is a changed man, at least in the regard of how he's viewing the game, because there are times, like, he'll say the right things, and then there's other times where he's like, I'm not really sure how I feel about this. And he does preach accountability, and there have been times where there are rumors that Brandon Saad was going to be sat. He didn't end up sitting, and I don't think he should have sat, because he's easily one of the best forwards on the team. I don't think, you know, if you sit him, that's trouble. I think they're, you know, at least having a talking to, and then possibly even the threat of a scratch is something that could be effective, especially with a young player like Saad, who's, you know, been to the Stanley Cup a couple times. You know, you're not above it. You know, you are going to have to be held in the same standard as someone like Lucas Sedlak or Josh Anderson. I think that's a smart move. I don't know long term how that's going to affect the players, but I'm hoping Tortorella can succeed. And what weirds me out, at least from a fan perspective, or, you know, even from a writer's perspective, is how people almost want him to fail. I don't really get that. Even as a human, just okay. I don't want anyone to fail. Do your best, and if he stinks, then, you know, so be it. But I'm not going to root for him to fail by any stretch. What are your feelings on Tortorella, Matt?
I agree that the, at least from my expectations, what he's been saying in press conferences has been wildly different from what I expected. That I guess the Vancouver experience had shaded my impressions of what would be so heavily that I expected this confrontational, a bit manic or whatever kind of existence from a guy. A lot of anger toward the press or something, and that's never ever materialized here. Not even when he was picked up mid-season, not this season, not when complaining about how a game had gone, like that game against St. Louis. If he was really so mad as to be furious, he would have been flying off the handle at reporters for asking questions. But it was very measured. It was, here's what's wrong, here's what we're going to try to do. Nothing too specific. Obviously, he's not going to tell other teams what he's doing, but he has seemed entirely rational about how he's approached all of this. Now, whether or not the results are all there, not necessarily in terms of the shot differential, but his perspective on things seems far more organized and calm and consistent than I had expected, which I suppose speaks to how my expectations were skewed by whatever type of information I was consuming, and I guess that's unfair on my part.
No,
I think it's interesting too to watch how people hear what he says. I mean, we had some stuff in our Slack chat a while back where you could take what Mike Sullivan was saying about his defense and what John Tortorella was saying about playing his defense, and they were literally almost identical. But, you know, one coach is praised and one coach is anti-thinking about hockey in a different way. And even there was a press conference a couple weeks ago where, because the Jackets stream all the press conferences now live, and it was Montreal. Some cameraman comes in mid-press conference and starts setting up his camera and literally was dropping chains in the room to the point that half the media had already turned around and looked at this guy. It was so disruptive. And Torts says something from the podium, simply says something like, "I'm sorry, I can't hear your question. There's a lot of noise back there." And all of a sudden on Twitter, Torts is yelling at a cameraman. I'm like, I think he did some stuff to color his reputation, but it's almost like now people can't hear him for what he's actually saying.
I mean, you remember the uproar around Edmonton when Todd McClellan did the cut the day off thing and the players agreed to it. Could you imagine, had Tortorella done such a thing, the absolute explosion that would have happened? It was big enough anyway, given that it was Edmonton and a McDavid story, but if it was Tortorella's shoes there, the fire would not be over yet.
Imagine if Torts was upset like Trotz was upset about a call that is perceived to have decided a game. Take Trotz's words today and say, "Oh, John Tortorella said this." Imagine.
And I think that's just something you have to deal with until there's like some long term success. And I think that I think he deserves some of the benefit of the doubt. But by the same token, if you're an outsider, you're not going to be following him on a day to day basis. And once you see something salacious, that's when you're gonna hop on board. And that's just confirmation bias, I think, on their end. But
salacious.
That's going to be the podcast title of this episode. I can feel it already. But
oh boy.
We'll be right back in just a moment with our interview with Rangers blogger John Coppinger. And we're back with our conversation with John Coppinger, writer for Puck Drunk Love. John, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, and I hope you guys are well. Thank you for having me tonight.
Yeah, of course, not a problem. I got the first question here for you. You know, we'll admit, we didn't expect the Rangers to come off to such a hot start. I'm not sure a lot of people were expecting much of this. The Rangers are the top scoring team in hockey right now. Why are they flying so high to start the year? Is everything just gone right? Is this just a shooting percentage mirage? What are you seeing out there?
I think it's definitely a combination of things. You know, I didn't expect them to get off to this fast start either. I think what I didn't expect was the chemistry to be so good early on in the year with guys like Jimmy Vesey and Brady Shea on defense taking such major roles this year. But the chemistry has been right on since day one. And these guys, when you watch them in the offensive zone, they make video game passes. But they also shoot when they're supposed to shoot. They take good, high-percentage shots, and I think that's part of the reason why their shooting percentage is so high at 14%. But I think it's partly the chemistry. I think it's partly guys improving this year. Chris Kreider's the best I've seen him in 2 years. Kevin Hayes might be the most improved player in hockey. Brady Shea has been their best defenseman on some nights this year. And also, you look at the penalty killing. If you're looking at something tangible, they were at 78% last year. And that was the one thing in the offseason that Jim Gordon said, we got to improve the penalty killing. So they go out and they get a guy like Michael Grabner, who's really helped on the penalty kill, even aside from all the goals he scored. And they're at 85% this year. So I think that's when you look at all of that combined, then you have the start that you have. I don't know if they're going to keep up the goal pace. They've slowed down tonight. They only have one through two periods, but it's really it's for Rangers teams in their history. This is definitely an anomaly for them, but it's nice to see.
So you had mentioned him along the reasons for some of the changes. Jimmy Vesey was I guess the biggest free agent name. I guess all the big trades kind of overshadowed that. He had a really hot start to the year, but he seems to have cooled off now that November has come around. What do you think of VC so far? Do you think he's been pretty good even when he's not doing all the scoring, or is it goals or bust for him?
I don't think it's goals or bust for him so much. Yeah, they did get him the score. And what I like about VC, and I noticed this right from the beginning, right from the Traverse City tournament in the off season, is that Jimmy VC goes to the net. He goes to the net and he shoots the puck, and that's something that we don't see a lot here. Guys going to the net. I mean, that's the decree of every fan base, right? Shoot the puck, go to the net. Jimmy VC does both, and you know, I don't expect him to keep up the pace that he had early in the season, but as long as he does those things, those things that made him successful in the off season and in training camp, just keep going to the net, keep finding the puck, and good things will happen. You know, I think I don't think he can keep up that pace on a game to game basis, but I think he's been fine. I don't worry about him. Also, the thing with VC is that they shuffle lines a lot with the left wingers. When Vigneault shuffles lines, it's usually with the left wingers. So VC's trying to find his place with he started off with the top line, and then he went to the third line with Kevin Hayes. So it's a little bit of an adjustment for him, but I think he'll be fine when all is said and done for the season.
Another summer change for the Rangers was Derek Brassard for Mika Zibanejad trade. How has he fit in thus far? What sort of impact has he had? And is he someone that, you know, is going to be a good long-term fit after, you know, they kind of traded in for a younger version of Brassard?
Yeah, that's basically what they did. It was, and a lot of that was cap-related, that trade. Zibanejad has been another one of those guys that has fit in really well. He's part of the chemistry. He's a good skater. He's a very good skater, and he's a good skater side to side too. When they work in the offensive zone, he knows where to be. He knows to find that open ice. And pretty much all the Rangers, they run a lot of backdoor plays, and they get a lot of good scoring chances that way. And Zibanejad is part of that. He had you saw him against Columbus, that tying goal where Brady Shea had the puck and then found him cross ice. It's just that's what Zibanejad's been doing. He's found open spaces. He's found that, and he's been finding those seams. And especially early on in the season, it's worked for him. And he's another guy, like kind of like VC, slowed down a little bit. But I like his speed, and I like what he does without the puck. So I think Zibanejad's going to be a very good long term piece to the Rangers puzzle. And they certainly gained 5 or 6 years age wise from that Brassard trade.
So you had mentioned the Jackets and the Rangers met this past Friday. I guess going in, looking at how the teams had done, you could have seen this as a high-flying, high-scoring matchup. Did you see that, or did the play go as you expected coming in? Did you have that expectation? And what do you think? How do you think the Jackets-Rangers series will go the rest of the season? What are your thoughts on the outside looking at the Blue Jackets?
Well, you know, it's funny. The first thing I did was I looked at the block shot totals, the block shot leaders, expecting to see Blue Jackets across the board. And I was shocked to see that their leader, Jack Johnson, only had 25 and didn't even make it on the first page of NHL.com. But and I know they had the two games where they had the 10 goals against Montreal, the 8 goals against St. Louis. But when it comes down to it, you know, Tortorella team is going to play tough, and I think they scouted the Rangers very well for that game, because they looked at their passing tendencies and they got their sticks in the middle, and the three goals that the Blue Jackets had were off of giveaways, but the Blue Jackets made that happen, just getting their sticks in the lane, and they might have gotten lucky, but they made their own luck. It was a very impressive win for Columbus, because it wasn't really a high flying game. I know the Rangers I felt they had lost a step in the first period and kind of got their legs late, but the Blue Jackets were very impressive, and I think a 7-game series in the playoffs potentially is going to be a lot of fun, especially when you see the sort of contrast in styles between Vigneault and Tortorella. It seems that Tortorella's gotten a little bit off of the mantra of everybody on the roster block shots, even if you're in the press box, you have to block shots too. But and I think that's great for Tortorella, because when he was here, everybody ran out of gas by the second or third round of the playoffs. It just it was a style that you can't keep up all year. He seemed to have gotten back from that, and yet still playing tough in the neutral zone and on the board. So it was I thought it was a very impressive win for the Jackets.
No doubt. What's the outlook this year with Lundqvist? He's clearly elite. There were some rumors last year that he could possibly be traded. Do you think his window is closing? Can the Rangers support him as they should, or is this still kind of the Henrik Lundqvist show?
I don't know if it's the Henrik Lundqvist show, and I don't think he wants it that way. Because, again, when you look at the last few years of Tortorella, it was everybody sagged back and let Henrik make all the saves. And I think that was kind of wearing on him a little bit. Now, at least with this offense, they're trying to possess the puck a little bit more. I know their possession numbers aren't great, but they're at least trying to push the play and get into the offensive zone so Lundqvist doesn't have to save 40 pucks a game. I think his window is definitely on the downside, but if they keep surrounding him with younger players, keep surrounding him with fast players, I think that's going to do well for him in the long term so that he doesn't hit a brick wall when he gets to the playoffs in April.
Okay, one last question from me that's a very selfish question. How is Rick Nash doing? He was a one-time fan favorite in Columbus, not necessarily so much anymore, although I still like him. Do you think he's been effective so far this year?
You know, I like Rick Nash. I think he gets a lot of flack here because he was brought in to be that 50-goal scorer, that big power forward, like a Cam Neely type. And it hasn't worked out so much like that. But Nash, the thing about Rick Nash is that he's a very well-rounded player. He plays well in his own end. I think a couple of years ago he should have gotten some Selke votes. That's how good I thought he was in the defensive end. He skates well. He sets up guys. He's a very good all-around player, but he doesn't get paid to be that all-around player. He gets paid finisher money. He gets paid to score 50 goals. He hasn't done that. So it's been a star-crossed career for Nash. And as far as this year goes, he has 7 goals, but it really hasn't been on him. And I think that in the long run, that'll help him. Because it's a very balanced team. It's a very, very balanced four-line team where everybody contributes. I mean, you talk about the Rangers this year, and you talk about Stepan gets talked about a lot, and he's had a very good year. Zuccarello looks really good. Nobody really talks about Rick Nash, and nobody's really paying attention to him. And I think that's better than having the bullseye on him. You know, he's had the bullseye on him the past few years. Not so much this year, and I think that'll help him. Because, you know, Rick Nash, I am kind of glad they didn't trade him because of his all-around game. I think on a balanced team, he'll fit very, very well.
Last question for me, and this is kind of diverting away from the Rangers and more of an NHL perspective. What has been your favorite storyline this year? I know, obviously, at Puck Drunk Love, you write about all kinds of stuff. Is there one player in particular or one team in particular that you've really been enjoying thus far?
I've really kept an eye on Patrick Laine. I had my eye on him because I know that with the hype that Austin Matthews has gotten, that Laine was going to be that forgotten guy. But Laine, from all accounts, had every bit as talent as Austin Matthews, if not more. And he's really come through with that. And he's been lighting up the score sheet where Matthews has kind of dipped a little bit. But I love seeing Laine in action. I think if the Winnipeg Jets had better goaltending, they'd be on top of the charts for sure. And it kind of makes me mad because I had a fantasy draft and I was looking for a right wing and I didn't scroll down far enough. And then so I picked Justin Williams. And then it was after that I scrolled down and I saw, oh, Laine's there. Nobody's going to pick him. Nobody knows who he is. And then he went in the next pick and I was furious. And I still yell at my friend for doing that. But yeah, Laine is something special, and I'm going to enjoy watching him when I can.
Yeah, Laine and Matthews are definitely going to be, you know, a storyline for at least the next 10-15 years for the NHL, and I'm sure they're very, very thankful for that. Now, before we let you go, John, this is your opportunity to plug your Twitter, where we can find your writing, any TV show that you've been watching recently. This is the floor is yours.
Oh, any TV show that I've been watching?
Yeah, you can talk about it.
Wow. I watch a lot of sports, and that's pretty much it. But yeah, if you know, my Twitter is at Metstradamus. I tweet a lot about baseball, but for the hockey, definitely find me on Puck Drunk Love, and I'll be talking most of my hockey there, and I really enjoy doing that, and I enjoy working with you guys. It's been a lot of fun, but that's for you guys in the hockey audience. I think that's the best place to find me, and hopefully it'll last a long time.
For sure. Thanks, John. Thanks for coming on. And we're back after our conversation with John Coppinger. Now it's time to talk a little bit about the NHL. John brought up a little bit about it with the Patrick Laine talk. What overall has been your guys' favorite part of the NHL season thus far? Matt, is there something in particular that stuck out to you?
Favorite part, I guess the combined parallel rise of Connor McDavid and continued ridiculousness of Sidney Crosby, that these two things happening at the same time are a lot of fun. McDavid early on and continues to be scoring at a ridiculous pace. He had a hat trick last night or the night before. But then Crosby is on a goal a game pace, which is insane. And I think we talked about this last time. I don't expect that to continue, but here we are. It's continuing anyway. So, those are really cool stories to keep up with. I realize that scoring in the NHL on the whole has dipped down back toward the averages from the past couple of years, but at least if those couple of guys can continue being entertaining, there's at least some degree of star power to hang on for the NHL.
Allison?
Yeah, I think I'm hanging on to the Calder competition, honestly. I think it's going to be fun to see who comes out, and I'm honestly intrigued to see how much national play Werenski will get in that race if he can keep up his performance.
I think this the part that I've been most excited about overall has been seeing the teams that last year weren't performing so well, and they're doing well this year. I may be saying that selfishly because of how the Blue Jackets are performing thus far, but they're not the only team, improved across the board. I know for a fact that the New Jersey Devils have been really, really good. Corey Schneider, when he's back there, that's generally going to be the case for the Devils. And they're gotten bit by the injury bug, especially with Taylor Hall. But I think that they could be a sneaky team that gets into the playoffs. Flyers, made it in last year, but also by the same token, they've also been pretty good. Their young players, Ivan Provorov, Travis Konecny, those are a couple of players that are going to be in the league for, 10, 15 years and are just flat out good. And I'm excited for the Metro to be good again. I mean, it's always been top heavy, but right now it's looking like all eight teams, have a stake. They can come out any night and beat the other team. And while that may not be great as a Blue Jackets fan, that's awesome as a hockey fan to see the teams, battling night in, night out.
I will say I am surprised, and it's early, so maybe this isn't real. I am surprised at how poor the Islanders have been.
That is true.
I guess maybe this is just an early start type of thing, but they haven't been great out the gate, and that's discouraging for a team that has Tavares in his prime doing Tavares things. And is that the only guy doing anything?
It would seem like it. Well, the problem is they've been juggling lines like crazy. They don't really want to commit to their young players just yet, and they're putting Cal Clutterbuck up on the first line. Andrew Ladd has been an unmitigated disaster thus far. They are, only a few weeks into a 7-year deal, and there's people at the Newsday asking what should be done with Andrew Ladd. That is absolutely terrible, and he's never been that kind of player. He's always been able to at least be able to perform at a respectable league level. They're definitely troublesome, and I don't know when it's ever going to end, especially with their goaltending. There was a trade, you know, a trade ask by Yaroslav Halak. I don't know where that status is now, but that's tough sledding for them. The Central, the Western Conference is very, very fun. The Pacific's a little down, but that's kind of exciting just to see what the hell's going to happen over there. Can the Oilers, you know, put something together and make it to the playoffs? That would be unbelievable for that fan base and for Connor McDavid and the league overall. And now it's time for some plugs, and I think Matt is going to start it off this week. Are you just going to plug the entire city of San Francisco, Matt?
I am not. I'm going to plug something else.
I guess you're allowed to.
Well, it is, yeah. I mean, that's how plugs works, right?
Yes, yes. Go on.
All right. Oh, goodness. So Thanksgiving is coming up. Thanksgiving is probably my favorite holiday of the entire year. It comes with getting to see family and eating a lot of delicious food with almost no expectations. Like with Christmas and stuff, if you're not giving good enough gifts, it's like, oh, I don't know, was it successful or whatever? You feel guilty about it, right? So I love Thanksgiving, and I would like to plug something that may cause a war within Buckeye State Hockey. Okay. I would like to plug stuffing.
Dude, stuffing is the best.
The greatest of all Thanksgiving foods.
You're wrong.
I hate it. It's not good.
It's
like, can you be less of a filler? Please, thank you.
My parents,
come on, stuffing.
My parents' stuffing recipe is out of this world. They make it every year, and I live for Thanksgiving stuffing.
Fine, I guess we'll let it pass. Allison, are you plugging a Thanksgiving food?
No, I am plugging, even though you already mentioned it, the musical Hamilton. I finally got to go see it earlier this weekend, and I have to say it is just simply the most magical, wonderful thing I've ever seen, and I loved every second of it, and if I could move into the theater and just watch it every day for the rest of my life, I'd be ever so happy. So, amazing.
Are you a big musical theater fan in general?
Selectively. Like, I'm not like a Lion King, like, those kind of musicals, but I love, like, Book of Mormon. I do like Wicked. I like the stories that make you think. And so it was just immersion into a wonderful world of creativeness. And I mean, the way they told the story, the way they staged the show, everything about it was just oozing with genius.
Awesome.
What's your favorite musical?
Well, that's a story for another time, Sam, because it's an embarrassing story. So we'll just talk about that one on our next pod.
Ooh, what a cliffhanger. I like it. I was about to say, you know, you're plugging Hamilton, but I don't think it needs to be plugged. I think at this point everybody knows what Hamilton is. But you know,
well,
I'm glad you're able to see
not.
It because I wish I could go see that. That's amazing.
I think not a lot of people don't really know what it is based on some of the stuff I've seen, but it really is just wonderful, just wonderful.
For my plug, I am doing the Netflix show, formerly a BBC show, The Fall. It is with Gillian Anderson of X-Files fame, and the co-star of it is Jamie Dornan. He's from the 50 Shades of Grey movie. He's the male lead in that. And in this, he is a serial killer, and she is a cop, and she is trying to track him down. And this all takes place in Northern Ireland in Belfast. And so you get this kind of like dreary environment and cat and mouse game between the two of them. It's on Netflix. All three seasons are up there, and it's been pretty fun because you really, really, really have no idea where it's going. And so the twists and turns are definitely different than any TV show that is out there right now, at least in my opinion. With all that being said, you can follow me at Sam_Blazer. You can follow Allison at AllisonL. You can follow Matt at ZeekBud, even though he's protected now and you can't retweet him. I still suggest following him. You can follow the website at BuckeyeSTHockey. You can subscribe to our podcast. You can go on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, any of those places, and you'll be able to find it. Leave a review, and we'd be greatly, greatly appreciated. That wasn't going to make sense. So we appreciate you. We appreciate you for listening and putting up with us week in and week out. And I guess what I'm trying to say is what we're most thankful for is you, the listeners. So we appreciate you.
Got real mushy real fast.
Tell you what.
Until next week. Until next week. Or, you know, I don't know when we'll be back. Thank you for listening. Next week. Next week, I guess we'll be back. Until next time. Bye.